Hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda, which today is the first of our election focus group discussions. Looking ahead, of course, to the House of Keys general election on September the 23rd. I'm sure that date is etched on your brain. What we're going to hear now is a group of people talking about what they believe are going to be the main election issues this time. They'll also be reflecting on the highs and lows of the past administration. And at the end of the programme, I'll give you the details to get in touch with me if you'd like to take part in future discussions. Today's meeting is chaired by James Davis.
The Isle of Man will go to the polls again this September for what some have described as the most important general election for a generation. On saying that, we've heard that plenty of times before, but its importance cannot be underestimated. 24 seats, 12 constituencies up for grabs, and the people we vote in will make decisions which affect our daily lives. With the campaigning and the door knocking about to begin in earnest, what do the election hopefuls need to do to hit the spot with their potential electors? And what are they looking for? I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a focus group assembled from different social and geographical backgrounds, made up of students, business people, those who've worked in local government, a real eclectic mix. Welcome one and all. Ailish, we have two Ailishes in fact. We have Archibald, we have Kira, and we have Richard Radcliffe as well. Lovely to see you all. Just a recap, Ailish, student, just completed her exams, a first-time voter, of course, and 16-year-olds and older have been able to vote since 2006. Kira is a 20-year-old astrophysics student, also in the middle of exams. Another Ailish in her 30s and expecting her first child. Many congratulations. Archibald, a student, and I think it's fair to say you're pretty politically engaged, looking at your recent background. And Richard, real champion of the community, someone who served the people of Ramsey for more than 30 years. So welcome one and all. Let me take Archibald to start with. What interests you then in this election? What should be the priorities for would-be politicians? What are you going to be looking for over the next few months?
I think I'll definitely look for politicians which engage the electorate and try to reach out and find out what issues really matter to the people that will be voting for them. And also the issue of obviously climate change and then the economic recovery out of COVID.
Ailish in the far side.
So to me, it's very much about representing the vulnerable in society and those people who can't necessarily speak up for themselves. Maybe they are not able to make their own petitions or stand outside Tynwald and protest, I suppose. That's really important to me, particularly the upcoming Capacity Act is something that's essential to me as
that's
well.
That's so important to you, yeah.
Very much so.
We'll come back to that, Ailish.
For me, it's engaging with young people and encouraging them to use the vote which they so luckily have.
Richard?
Healthcare, main priority. How does healthcare deal with what looks like it's going to be an ongoing problem with the COVID situation, with basically everything in one place at the moment in Nobles? How are we going to move services out so that healthcare isn't so adversely affected if another variant comes along and causes Nobles to be full? Also, policing in its broader sense, starting with the day they're born, how do you make sure that people don't fall in to the criminal justice system? I think we're far too late addressing people. I think our social services are not doing what they should be at the moment. People of my generation, they want more visible policing. Done it in the past where the police have been looking for their community officer of the year, asked people in Ramsey, could they name a police officer based in Ramsey? And unfortunately, they couldn't. So if it's that is community policing, then I'm an aardvark.
Food for thought, Kira?
Housing to me is really important. You know, house prices are out of control over the last year or so. You know, offshore speculation in the housing market has driven prices up. And with me coming back from uni, hopefully in a couple of years, and looking for somewhere permanent to live, it's something that's quite close to my heart. And, you know, just getting students back over, the whole brain drain, you know, in a few years, you're going to see pensions, the pension fund's going to be in a problem. And as Archie said as well, climate change is probably the biggest long-term issue that's going to face certainly our generation and probably multiple ones after it as well.
Of course, you were one of the protesters at the climate change.
Both
in
well.
Fact, both
yeah,
of you were. Yeah. A statement we regularly hear is by choosing to vote in the election, you can have a say in the future of the Isle of Man. So do you, Kira, genuinely believe that?
I think so, yeah. I think it depends on the candidate as well at the end of the day. You know, if you have solid candidates, then a vote can definitely, you know, impact the future of the island.
Did you ever see your MHKs in schools in recent years and even up to now?
I've definitely seen a regular occurrence of both of them. More one, Graham Kajun, when he was education minister, but they do seem to come into school, not necessarily to speak to students, but also to get involved with the community.
Yeah, I'd have to disagree. I think that it's imperative that RMHKs come into school and do assemblies with young people, especially 16 and onwards, obviously, and encourage them to use their vote. I cannot remember ever having an assembly or any kind of meeting with our prospective MHKs last election. I was younger, however, still I think I would have benefited from hearing about like Manx politics and how it could change our lives and how our parents were even voting. I think that would have been really useful.
The very fact you're here means I'm assuming you're all likely to vote, or are any of you undecided?
Indeed.
I'm voting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're all voting. You're all going to vote. I assume that, but I didn't like to. Are politicians, Richard, are some of them separated from the majority of ordinary people, if I can put it that way?
I think that when they go in there, they go in with the best of intentions, but they soon fall into the corporate identity. They tend to lose their individual identity, and it's so easy to do. They have to go in there, remember what their promises to the people were, and regardless of whether it's popular or unpopular, do what's right for the people, not what's right for the corporate identity of government.
Kira?
I think that's a benefit of party politics, actually. You know, we don't have very big parties on the islands. It's not really a very large part of Tynwald. But I think that is a benefit to party politics. You do have a party behind you with specific policies, and therefore, you are much more inclined to continue to fight for those policies over the course of your term.
Well, you've recently signed up to the Manx Labour Party.
Yeah,
of course.
Part of Manx Labour.
Is there anybody else here in favour now that thinks the island needs party politics as opposed to the current system?
I think there's some arguments for kind of party politics and the benefits of them, which is, as Kira mentioned, maybe a more steady manifesto and more consistent policies. But then there are, I think, quite a lot of arguments against. I know June Watson made an interesting case for independence, because there is kind of that stability throughout. You have MHKs who will stay longer, and then their policies also maybe relate more to the individual people within the constituency rather than on a wider island basis.
I think people who are standing for a specific constituency can still tailor the policies to their constituency, though.
But then there's not necessarily a necessity. We already have a form of office party system with Coven forming a government. I think it makes us kind of unique in the system where we subside, that we have that ability where political parties are welcome to come in, but there hasn't been that much of an uptake recently.
Richard, you were first elected as a commissioner a couple of years before ministerial government started. So you will have seen the old board system, you'll have seen ministers, you will have seen and heard the arguments for and against party politics. So where do you stand?
People will still vote for somebody they know well, who they've seen in the town, know what he's done, rather than for somebody representing a party. And I think breaking through that glass ceiling is going to take an awful long time. That's not in the Manx psyche.
The island's not ready for party politics?
No.
I want to go back, Eilish, to what you said just before about your wishes for areas and issues that you hope this election will provide a platform for. You touched upon vulnerabilities there and support. Can you just embellish on that a little?
I've worked in the UK for many years and worked very heavily within the Mental Capacity Act. And I think having moved back, I just feel like we've been effectively let down, or the vulnerable in society have been let down by the Capacity Act not even having been considered. And I understand that it's been spoke about in a number of occasions, but it's not been pushed through particularly, and now it is. So I wonder whether sometimes it is the people that don't shout the loudest that get left behind. So for me, it's really important for the person who's representing my constituency to have those people in mind and to be able to represent them and stand up when everyone else says, oh no, actually maybe we'll just shelf this for another year, to stand up and say no, that's not acceptable, that's not what I'm representing, the people that I'm representing.
Are we ever going to have enough funds for issues, all health related issues, or have we got to box clever, Richard?
Health, we have to box clever, and I think having an annual budget doesn't help, because there are certainly very expensive items which, if they were purchased now, would benefit one to the patients, but two financially in the future, and you can't buy these expensive items working on an annual budget. I would prefer to see departments, not just health, but health in particular, working on a five-year budget, so that if there is a £3 million scanner that they need that's going to save sending 5,000 people across over the period of 5 years, let's do that.
I don't think I necessarily support that, because there is a necessity to act in the short term, kind of with Treasury giving out that money in the short term. Different projects require different capital investments. I think with the budget, they already do allocate for that investment. And obviously, with departments like the DOI, where something might come up halfway through that, and they suddenly need more funding for that year, it is allocated, again, on a yearly basis to allow for that. But over a five-year period, you could see maybe not COVID, for example, they can't necessarily adapt certain budgetary requirements and cut from certain departments to give to other departments with more importance.
All departments have the right to go to General for a supplementary vote, and when something like COVID comes along, then supplementary votes have to be the order of the day.
Do you have more or less faith in politics now than you did in 2016 at the last general election, or about the same?
The perception hasn't changed. I think that on the health issue, I would say they've probably scored about 8 out of 10. Certainly on the first run of COVID, I would say they were faultless, but they've made a couple of mistakes since then, and it seems to be a no-blame game as well, still going on within government. And I think that people are very, shall we say, suspect that nobody ever carries the can if they were in the private sector for some of the mistakes that have been made. They would undoubtedly have been sacked, but up there they seem to have Teflon clothing.
Ailish, how do you believe the Isle of Man government has handled COVID?
I would agree with you that the first run was handled really well, and we were so lucky to have our full summer, you know, no restrictions whatsoever. I think the second lockdown was inevitable with uni students coming back. We couldn't just completely close the borders to them. So I think that was inevitable. And then the third lockdown, I think, was caused by maybe the second lockdown being too short and the easing of restrictions way too soon. So, yeah, I think there was a blunder between the second and third lockdown.
I think we've actually handled it really very well. And I think anyone can criticise anything. There's always going to be something that we can criticise. It's a situation that none of us have ever been in before. But I think, speaking to my friends who live in the UK, I feel our government handled it really very well and allowed us to have that period of normality throughout the summer, which was a real treat that no one in the UK had. I think lockdowns were inevitable and they were an important part of managing it on the island.
I just want to touch on something that Ailish said. Sorry. You said that it happens about COVID, like it was inevitable, but I think there are some families on the island who lost loved ones because of government mistakes who probably wouldn't agree with you that it was inevitable. And I think they want to see someone held to account because their loved ones died because of government mistakes that could very much have not happened. You know, the steam packet debacle, that was no fault of the steam packet, I think that happened, and no one has come forward and said, okay, fine, this was my fault, I'm really sorry, it's not going to happen again. You know, in the last week, we have seen politicians apologise for it and say that mistakes were made. But these are not just simple mistakes. These have cost people's lives.
I'm sure we could have a separate programme completely on just that issue alone. But just let me move on slightly, Archibald. Do the public now, are they less tolerant than they were? Are they, do they expect too much? Or does government not deliver enough? This is generally, but led on from COVID, because obviously we've just heard praise at one end of the table and then quite a sort of scathing comment with reason at the other end.
I think the government, the public are generally tolerant with the government, provided that I think they got a bit lethargic after the third lockdown. You saw a lot more comments. Although I know social media isn't necessarily a true representation of the island's people, you do see a lot more comments kind of getting more annoyed at the government. But I do think that is still that level of tolerance, that our government did try its best to kind of protect our island. Obviously, there's a lot of quite against hindsight thinking. There's a lot of mistakes. Mistakes do get made, and they get made in the process, but it was very unforeseen circumstances and something we'd never experienced on such a mass scale. So they did perform remarkably well, considering kind of their previous actions to other events.
Let me ask you, Richard, do our elected representatives at both local authority and central government level, do they receive enough respect?
I think there are people who go in there thinking they can demand it. You can't. No, you have to be of the people and for the people. I believe that in the main they do. The Manx people are very fair. And if they don't agree with you, as long as you can give them a cogent argument as to why you've done what you've done, they may not like it, but they will accept it. But I'm afraid we have too many who are like saplings in the wind who just go along with the last person they've spoken to. I'm afraid there's a few spineless politicians on this island.
Ailish, on the far side there, just what prompted you to move to the island? To move back, I should say. Yeah.
So I had to move to the UK because there was no job opportunities for me over here. So as soon as I felt I had enough experience, I came back and set up my own business. So really, it was waiting for that the right amount of experience and confidence that I had to be able to come back to set up
right.
by myself.
Right, and that leads me on to your comment, Kira, about brain drain. I mean, you'll finish your degree in 3, maybe 4 years' time. As it stands now, and I know a lot can change in that time, would your aim to be to come back here or stay away?
It depends what I do after my degree. I'm not entirely set on what I want to do, but there are a couple of jobs that there isn't yeah. a sector for on the island, and so that's automatically ruled out me coming back, which is a real shame because I do want to come back. If I can come back, I will.
And I appreciate you're just at the start of that journey even more so, Eilish, but as it stands now, you're going to study English and French, so where do you see yourself in that question, isn't it? Where do you see yourself in 4 years' time?
I honestly don't know, because with French it could take me anywhere. I always do see myself moving back here if I wanted to settle or have children, because I think it's an amazing place to raise children. But I don't know, because with certain sectors, as you said, I feel like you can only like travel so far up like the ladder, and for some people I think that's a reason why not to move back.
You mentioned housing before. I mean, how much is housing been a problem over the years, Richard, for that age group?
Housing is always a problem, no matter what generation you've lived in. Getting that first foot on the property ladder is always the most difficult, but we have exceptional circumstances now where we've had a vast influx caused by COVID. And properties that had been on the market for 18 months have snapped up. I know people who've put in an offer, had it accepted, and a day later somebody's in with 20,000 more. There's limited supply at the moment, but huge demand. So we have to address the supply problem. And people won't like it, but I'm afraid that some greenfield sites are going to have to be developed. Otherwise, our young people will forever be stuck in rented property, which isn't an aspiration that any government should have.
I think that's something that we were very conscious of moving back to the island as well, where we lived in the UK. We could have easily afforded a property, but over here we had to move back in with my in-laws for a significant period of time to be able to save for a deposit. And we were very lucky that that was an option for us, that we didn't have to rent and have that money going out. But it is really difficult. And with the recent increase, I really feel for people who are trying to get their first step on the ladder.
I want to just address the three students, first of all, Eilish, Archibald and Kira. Do you believe, starting with you, Kira, do young people feel listened to?
I think generally young people do not feel listened to. I think that's reflected in voter turnout on the island. You know, in the Douglas House by-election, there was 25% turnout amongst 16 and 17-year-olds. You know, the amount of people who voted was 16 in that age group, which is so low. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, we don't feel listened to by the majority of politicians.
Is it that, though, or is it that there will always be only a small percentage of 16-year-olds who are politically aware and politically interested enough? I mean, we gave in 2006 the 16-year-olds the vote in the hope of encouraging lifelong political encouragement, but in some cases that comes later, doesn't it?
I think political involvement comes with experience. So actual experience of meeting potential MHKs and meeting the commissioners of your parish, even, I think that like stirs up something inside young people that makes them want to contribute to community and use their vote.
You just reminded me now, I think, Richard, when you were on the commissioners a couple of times, certainly I think the commissioners held mock elections to try and generate interest, didn't they?
Yeah, that's been done, certainly. Suddenly trying to engage people at 16, I'm afraid you've missed the boat.
I can't talk on behalf of young people, but I think making the information accessible, for example, something that I'm really looking for as well is people's manifestos that are accessible for people with a learning disability or people with difficulties with reading. So if you're looking for more people to vote, I feel like they should really be targeting that area as well, because that is an area that if the information's not accessible, they're not going to actively be involved and engaged.
Certainly in much younger people, 13 to 14-year-olds, I think, if you plant that seed in people young, then it will just grow and grow. That's what I found, because I've been interested in politics since I was quite young. But in other people my age, a lot of them aren't interested or don't think that their vote matters in this election. And I can't convince them otherwise.
Always listen to everybody, because one day the lone voice in the wilderness will be right.
How do you nudge, Richard, those who aren't interested in politics to show them how important it is?
I'm afraid there's an ingrained attitude that your vote doesn't matter, that one person cannot make a difference. But yes, one person can make a difference. You have to get that message there, that if everybody goes out and vote, then the majority view will count. You've got to start when they're 7, 8.
Have them
involved. Ask them what they want for their town. Well, they're the future. Start them at an early age. And say, if you wait till they're 12,
in their teens,
it's too late. No, start them early.
just rounding this discussion off to a close now, is there genuine enthusiasm for change this September, or are you largely happy with your lot, Eilish?
I am very enthusiastic for change. In particular, I think health and the fact that we have so few specialist services on the island. I feel like using population is an excuse that we don't have a big enough population, but I feel like there is the power for change and to create specialist services that could be amazing. Because you've got such a small group, you could make it really bespoke. But I do think there's definitely time for change.
Yeah, I'm really excited actually to see. I'm hoping to see a big influx of young people voting and wanting to vote and putting their opinions out there. And I'm hoping to see the politicians of the Isle of Man actually listening more to young people and bring up their issues and their concerns, actually. Yeah,
I'd agree. We do need the views of young people to be taken account of. They are the future. It's our mess that they're going to pick up. And if one good thing comes out of COVID for government, it'll perhaps be this endless increase in bureaucracy, which had to go to respond to an emergency. These committees with four-letter acronyms on them that nobody understands, that meet endlessly, have to go. The bureaucracy up there has just grown like Topsy and it needs smashing.
Do politicians listen to our younger generation more now than they did 20 years ago?
I think they probably do, because social media means that they can actually have their comments out there, which they couldn't 20 years ago.
I'd say there's change needed in certain areas. There's not change needed across the board. I think there's definitely change needed in creating more ambitious climate targets. But along with the economic scope, I think we are recovering rather well with the government support, and we are managing to balance the deficit rather well. So I think there's change needed in certain areas, but not so much in others.
I'm counting down the days to the general election. I think we desperately need a change in Tynwald, especially. Comyn, you know, I describe it as being apathetic. Not much gets done. It takes a lot of public outrage.
Is that the system, or is that down to individuals?
I think it's mostly down to individuals. I think the system as a whole is undemocratic.
Just in a word, to make our society fair, do we need to make modest change or more radical change?
I'd say definitely making more modest change would appeal more, because the Isle of Man does have that slow rate of change, and to appeal to a large majority of people, it's small incremental change that makes, I suppose, a bigger difference in the long term, rather than scaring people by invoking really radical policy decisions.
And I'm certain that Kira's going to disagree with that.
Indeed.
Yeah, I think, you know, whilst moderate change may be more appealing, radical change is needed in the next few years to fend off some of the biggest crises that are going to hit the island in the long term.
We all know that Manx people don't like change, but I do think it does need to happen, yeah.
Radically.
Radical, yeah.
Radically. Richard?
Yeah. Don't go big on radical. I would say that you should evolve, always challenge yourself to be better, but be aware that in certain cases you may have a chasm and you can't cross that in two steps.
Hmm. We've got too radical, too moderate, modest. No pressure, Eilish, but you've got the casting vote.
I think for me, sometimes you can take on too much, and is the radical approach going to be that everything will be done a little bit but not enough, if that makes sense, that they take on too much, so then actually not much changes? Is it better to have quick wins and look at more modest approach and getting stuff right and getting stuff actually finished than pushing really hard, trying to create change in loads of areas, and then actually not really doing anything?
A mixed bag of views, mixed feedback. Thank you. It's been very enjoyable. Here's to the general election 2021, and thank you all for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to James Davis for chairing the first of our election focus group discussions. Isn't it great to hear from real people who are directly affected by the politics that happens here in the Isle of Man? And if you'd like to take part in a future discussion, you can send me an email, election@manxradio.com. Until next time, goodbye.